Welcome to Untamed Blossoms, the podcast where we celebrate the untamed journey of womanhood. Here, we tell the stories of incredible women who have embraced their authenticity, inspiring others to do the same.
From entrepreneurs to artists, activists to adventurers, we share triumphs, challenges, and the beauty of self-discovery. These are the stories of women blazing their own trails, breaking free, and blooming unapologetically.
Join us to connect, be inspired, and celebrate the power of women's stories. Together, let's rewrite the rules and embrace our wildness.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms. I'm your host, Amanda Riley.
And I'm Christy Riley. Welcome to the pod.
Christy has officially switched me over to tea. I have had too much caffeine today. And now we are full throttle herbal tea versus lattes.
You were jittery. I also fed you.
You did. Not really. Was a game changer. When you realize you've had nothing but caffeine and a protein shake and it's 3 p.m.
You need to.
Alarm bells happen.
And some non-caffeinated tea.
Yeah, this can only help, honestly. I think, you know, sometimes when we have days where we're doing all the things, we have to remember to nourish ourselves.
That's right.
Because honestly, we didn't nourish ourselves.
We did not. We did not. I didn't feed you. That is a correction.
Stan.
My sweet lovey brought us food out in the midst of our recording day.
Yeah.
Feed us.
If he hadn't, who knows where we would be right now.
We destroyed that like it was our jobs.
Oh, my God. I have never been so hungry in my whole – once he sat that plate down, I thought, this will be on in moments. I need all of this. So
– What is everybody else going to eat? Is that
what you're doing? I was like, I will devour this entire dip in 1 second. And I did. So
– It was delicious.
We just had Thank a wonderful you. Interview with Sarah. Was
she
so
us for our review of 2024, our season one review. She's a beautiful human.
I like that she asked us like which episodes evoked what feelings. I think all of them were so wonderful and teaching moments in so many of them, but it was nice to kind of reflect back on like,
yeah, and think about all of them.
Yeah, totally.
And how far we've come. Trials, tribulations. Making it happen.
Even today, we had a solid 30 minutes of technical issues, but it was totally fine. It worked
right out. In the middle of her interview. We lost internet.
Although we had full throttle internet signal.
We are,
so
I don't know what's happening.
It's going to be an editing obstacle course a little later today.
She may be stressed.
We'll see. But you know, we only have a few crystals in here right now, which could be.
I know. I've only brought a couple out. I have to bring them.
I have so many I could have brought today, and I just. Yeah.
I just keep bringing them a little at a time as I find them in the house, bring over.
I love that.
Yeah. So we will have a shrine at some point.
Will you tell us a little bit about today's guest? She is one of your good friends and someone that you love dearly. I would love to hear a little bit about Janine.
Janine is an amazing human. I love to equate her to like a little sprite fairy in the forest. That's how I think of her. She's just a delight always. And, she's going to tell us her story. So I won't tell too much, but how I met her was somebody turned me on to biofeedback. And at first I was like, well, that's woo woo shit. I'm totally in. Sign me up. Turns out that's not anywhere close to what it is. It's real science. And, what she does is amazing. I am clearly an energetic human, very high energy. And that's what biofeedback is all energetics. And it's really beautiful. And I go see her probably once a month or so, sometimes twice a month. And she literally communicates with my body through this technology that tells it what it needs. And you kind of get an energetic boost, is what I'll call it. And I can literally feel all the things that she's doing. I'll be like, oh, I'm really warm all of a sudden. I'm really now her and I are we're so good friends that we chat the whole time and I don't really pay attention to my body as much as as before. But we totally chat the whole time and talk about things from all the things, politics. There's nothing there's not a topic that we don't broach. And when you find somebody that you can have those conversations with, I find those people. So
I love that.
I can't wait to have her on. I've been so excited to talk with her. I think she's got some amazing stories in store for us, possibly. She's lived a crazy life. Not crazy. That was not the right term. But she's lived an eventful life. She's got a lot of fun things. And just what she does every year just for her entertainment is entertaining to me. So, yeah.
So exciting.
Can't wait to talk to her.
I first met her when we were fig tree planting.
Yes.
And then again at the dance party. But we both looked so different from our fig planting getup. Then at first I was like, is that her? But then I remember the sprite little fairy that you mentioned. I was like, ah, this is her for sure.
For sure. So, yeah.
All right. Well, without further ado, Janine, welcome to the pod.
Well, thanks for having me. I don't know what to start with, you know, honestly. Nice things to say about me and even biofeedback and everything. And you were a good fig digger that day, too.
Thank you.
I just want to say that.
Thank you.
Yes, we were all sweaty and hot and dirty that day. And then, I didn't recognize you next to myself.
Like, who's this girl with sparkles on?
Like, what? We were after it that day, for sure.
You're the muddiest I think I've ever been. Well, Janine, I know that Christy is very familiar with biofeedback as she's been going to you, but I am not, and I'm sure many of our listeners are not aware of really what that means. So I think I would love for you to start off today giving us a little background of what it is and kind of how you got into that field.
Okay, I'll be happy to. It is a unique field. I've been doing it for about 10 years, and it is a FDA-cleared system that uses electrodes that are just like Velcro straps around wrists and ankles. There's a headband. And I'm sending subtle signals in through the skin where I'm measuring the voltage of cells, of organ tissue, of the, you know, cardiovascular system, the musculoskeletal system, you name it. It's looking at the endocrine, which is our hormonal system. And it's evaluating it against a baseline of what the average human voltage should be, and it highlights where the body isn't performing well. And so it's able to detect, you know, where someone might have inflammation, some kind of challenge, or a hiccup in the system, but it also will give us the reasons behind that. And so it can indicate forms of fungus, mold, parasites, emotions make us unwell, hormonal balances, food, of course, pollution, you name it. So it can read all that, and then it sends signals back in. That's why it's like a biofeedback loop. Go back in and balance these items out. So people come in for knowledge of what's going on in their body. And then also people come back repeatedly for, I'm using air quotes, treatment, not really allowed to say that, but, you know, some kind of balancing. Yeah. And so it's an invaluable tool in my world. So I love it. I love what I do. I got into it because I had been diagnosed with IBS. And that irritable bowel syndrome, for those who don't know, and it's such a vague label that it doesn't help the person out. And doctors these days are quite busy and they don't get to do further evaluation, but they'll give you medicine to help with the situation. And those medicines weren't working for me. And no one was going to talk to me about food or parasites and until someone suggested I get in front of a machine like my biofeedback system to kind of give a clear view of what is really happening. And once I discovered that, I could correct my IBS in about 2 or 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
I reversed it.
And it isn't because the machine did it, is because I gained knowledge about what was actually going on in my body.
Wow. Right?
So that's how I started my career in that. But I've had several different interesting careers along the way. But once I found this one, I thought this is my niche. This is my thing because I get to help people and I love that more than anything. So
that's incredible. I know you've helped Christy a ton. She has done nothing but sing your praises.
I only see Janine.
Truly.
I only Janine. I don't do other treatments. I only Janine. Yep. That's all
that
I do.
That is so nice. Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about something that you found out through one of your sessions that you were just mind blown about? I know there's many, but just can you give an example maybe for someone listening of like what you experienced?
I would say the most recent one would be that I keep having sugar regulation come up on my scan.
trouble with sugar regulation, trouble with sugar regulation. And I'm like, okay, but I don't eat terribly, right? Like, okay, but what is causing this? And so she would treat it and it would come up every single time. And recently we just tracked it back and was able to show that I was not really breaking proteins down in my gut the proper way. And then I needed enzymes. And so now I'm taking digestive enzymes when I eat. And the last time I went in to see her, it was the first time I think ever since I've been seeing her that I didn't have sugar regulation come up on my scan. So you can have an impact when you know what your body needs, right? So there's that. She knew that I had been exposed to a fungus. I was having severe pain in my joints. And I was like, you have to figure out, like, please ask it what's happening because I need to know. And it was mostly hormones. So everybody knows I'm going through menopause. And on top of that, I had a fungal infection that had gotten into my joints. And so treating that with, you know, now I'm not going to go on any antifungals, but I did start taking oregano, which really helps, right? And so just knowing what some of those things are, she's, you know, this machine can start telling you if you've got something that you really need to worry about. If there's something that, you know, she can't diagnose anything, but if something continues to show up, most likely you're struggling in that arena for some reason. And so either it requires, for the Janine, you can jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, but that would require seeking out a physician to be like, we need to get further diagnostics.
Absolutely.
MRIs, CAT scans, PET scans. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm concerned that this keeps showing up. This might be cancer. You should get this looked at. Mm-hmm. Whatever that looks like, right? So it's literally a communication tool with your body. How freaking cool is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm mind blown at every time. And she'll be like, oh, I'm working on your parasympathetic system. And I'm like, oh, I'm really warm in my center. You know, yeah. Like, it or not, oh, I got a sudden headache all of a sudden while she's treating my frontal lobe. Like, it's an interesting, like, if you're really in tune with your body, you can feel it. And it's not woo-woo. It's real. I can feel whatever the system is doing inside of me. I can feel it inside. Yeah. And I always feel good. She aligns my chakras when she does that. I always feel amazing afterwards. We don't do that every session, but if we have time, it's really great. And, you know, for those who are like, oh, the chakras, that's what it's, they're energetic centers in your body and they can get out of line. So the machine will get you all in alignment and I can feel that. Like it immediately shifts my mood.
Yeah.
And the way I feel in my body. So
yeah. I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have you had any kind of, pushback or anything from people when you share this and what you're doing? Like, have you experienced any kind of adversity with that?
Actually, no.
It's amazing.
I don't know how this has occurred in my you know, career as a biofeedback technician. I have not. Because people, when they're coming to me, they're desperate. And I'm really sad to hear that and say that, but that's the truth. And they're looking for answers. So they are actually open to anything once they're in my door. And if I've just entered into a conversation with someone in a room about this, there's no pushback because they simply probably don't understand exactly, or there might be a little bit bored even. So when I have someone who's actually walked in, or a person who's brought their child in, or a spouse or a friend, it's because they really are, you know, really needing answers on something that is not been able to be diagnosed by your traditional mechanisms for our conventional medicine. So, no. And most of the time, and I love a skeptic, and I actually never require anyone tell me anything about them when they come in. I don't have like an intake form, like tell me where it hurts and what kind of meds are you on? I don't want to know because the system's going to show me all that.
Right.
And it's amazing technology. So I don't have to ask. It will be revealed. And through that comes this organic conversation about what's going on in that person's body. But I first like to tell them what's going on in their body. And they'll go, oh my gosh, it shows that. You can see that. Or yes, I suspected that. And it's very validating. And that's when I tell the person that, so that's where the breakdown is. It's here. And I didn't even ask you that. And so now we can already start with a plan if they need to
change something lifestyle-wise, whether it be dietary or they need more sleep or they need whatever, exercise, just walk. I don't sell supplements or anything like that. So I'm not about, hey, you need this and I happen to have it over here on my shelf.
Yeah.
So it isn't even about that. It's more like I just want people to be empowered so that they can go and make these balances themselves. Half of us do not need medicine if we know what to do. Yeah. And so, no, I don't really face a lot of resistance. I face people who are a little shocked, who are like, wow, I don't know if I could give that up or if I want it. So they may not be mentally prepared to make changes they should make. But yeah, no, it's
cool. It's almost like backwards from what you would get at the traditional doctor's office, right?
Yeah.
So as someone who doesn't go to the doctors a lot, mostly from deep childhood trauma, but I would say the biggest fear is walking in and saying, hey, this thing hurts. And they're like, great. It's because you're overweight. Please lose 10 pounds in a year. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think a lot of us have that same experience where we're being treated for what's on surface and what the easiest, quickest diagnostic could be.
Right.
And so it's very interesting to hear that really using science to truly understand what areas and then back your way into the causation. So
right. This incredible. Is a class 2 medical device. And then the next question is, well, if it's so good, how come the doctors aren't using it? You know, but a doctor could actually use it. And there are some that do. They're just not in our area. And it's because most of them just never get the knowledge that something like this exists. If they don't have their own natural curiosity to attend different kind of health conferences or read different periodicals, they just don't get it in their radius to understand. And so they are just unaware. Yeah. So that's the other thing.
Doctors, unfortunately, I think the medical school
in America, they do not encourage
them learning alternative medicine.
No.
They consider this alternative medicine, which in my opinion is a fucking joke.
Yeah.
It's not alternative medicine. No. Janine's not a psychic, you know, like it is a science-based algorithm that is happening, that's being ran through my body electronically, the same as if I put EKG spots on my chest and it's listening and reading my heart rate and telling me what my, you know, what my heart is performing, the electrical current in my heart is doing. So this is not different
than
that.
Different.
It's not any different, and we're not using it because they're not taught. And this is not against any physicians out there. I know that all of you are here to do good, right?
Yeah,
you're trying
absolutely.
To help people. Mm-hmm. They're not taught about these alternative things. And by the way, our insurance doesn't cover these things. They won't even touch this with Janine. Like, they wouldn't even consider this to be something that they would cover as preventative care. And that's exactly what this is. It's preventative care. And they just, unfortunately, this is a soapbox of mine. Sorry, y'all. We just want to give you a pill. We just want to hand you something, and here's how you can control those symptoms. But we're not going to come to the causative effects to keep you healthy. We don't really want to keep you healthy. And unfortunately, I think that's where we're at, and that's how they're taught. Mm-hmm. They're not taught that nutrition can cause people to be sick. They're not taught that emotions can cause. She told me that the brewery was not good for me,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that. She didn't know that. Mm-hmm. She had no idea. And the machine was like, not great for you.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Hops, right? Mm-hmm. And she just thought I'd been drinking beer. You and I know I hate beer.
Yeah.
She's like, I just assumed that you probably partook in, you know, having a beer with dinner or something last night. And I was like, she's like, and it was on my top five. Yeah, she always gives you your top five of what your body is looking for help with. And Hops' remedy was on my top five.
And it's because it detected that the hops gases and particles have, you know, gotten into your system and your body was having an adverse reaction to being surrounded by hops particulates.
Right.
And that is a thing. And people dismiss a lot like these little things like, it couldn't be that. It is.
Oh,
it is such a true thing.
And it's true. That environment, you know what it smells like when you walk into the brewery because we were there. Our office was there. Like, we were hanging out in that space all the time and they were brewing hops constantly. Like, it was very hoppy all the time. And so I was like, that's it. Not going back. I'm out.
Yeah.
Janine said I can't be there. It's bad for my body. But who would know that, right? Like, you could go years down the road and being one of these facilities and never find that out had I not been going and just you. And so it's just a cool thing. Every time I've been exposed to COVID, it comes up on her thing, whether I'm symptomatic or not. Every time a virus is in my system, she's like, your immune system's working hard. Yeah, everyone around me is sick as a dog, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not sick, but yeah, my immune system's working. She will report back to me what's going on in my life based on what she's seeing on the machine. Yeah. And it's just really cool. And the fact that, you know, some people can't afford to have this, and this isn't a more routine thing that we're doing for people to give them the knowledge they need to fix their own bodies before they're broken.
Yeah.
Is really sad to me.
Yeah.
It's a statement to the state of where we're at in healthcare
yeah.
in the US, in my opinion. So
I'm interested. You said that you've done many things before this. Mm-hmm. So can you give us a little background on some of the places and industries and careers you've had up prior to doing this?
Gosh. Just a short story, the different careers, because they're not very conventional. I used to work with NetJets mm-hmm. for 7 years. And so I was a flight attendant on a private jet. And therefore, I encountered a lot of amazing and interesting people. Mm-hmm. I traveled around the world. And then went into management with NetJets for 7 years. I've also, this is a hot name in our current status of like world or local world events, but I used to work for Michael Jeffries of Abercrombie and Fitch directly. He's under a lot of scrutiny right now mm-hmm. for sex trafficking allegations. So mm-hmm. I have all these weird little stories and things like that. But basically, I grew up. I was born in Chicago. Yes, I grew up. I finally have grown up. That's my story. I feel like the name Untamed Blossom is really perfect for someone like me because I kind of broke rules to get where I am today. And that doesn't seem like, I'm a big wig and I broke. But in my own little world, I had to break rules. I had to do things that were probably very scary for some others and for me at the time, too. And so, but anyway, I was born in Chicago. My mom had, I had two stepdads and we ended up moving to Wisconsin. And I ended up growing up on an Indian reservation from the age of 8 to 18. And if anyone, I know you guys don't know what I look like, but I'm fair skinned. I have light hair. So I got to see how things were for that community. And I was the odd man out on the school bus. And I did not grow up wealthy or anything, not even, you know, blue collar. It was beyond that. So we were on the government cheese program. So I got the bullying from, you know, the Native American community, but they're comfortable with calling themselves Indians. So I go referring back to Indians and it's not any kind of derogatory thing, right? So anyway, so I got to experience that kind of childhood and not being any kind of a cool kid, not being a popular girl, not being the smartest, not being able to do much of anything, living out in the country and always having to take the school bus. I didn't get extracurricular activities. So my thing was to make friends with all the foreign exchange students, because if I did, I got to like take them to their football game or take them to the mall and do these kind of, yes, I grew up in the 80s. sorry.
We went to malls. That's what we did for fun.
This is what we did. And yeah. In Wisconsin,
right.
That's yeah. about what you're
right.
going to do.
For sure.
You know, so I just had a lot of international friends for 1 year at a time. I didn't build bonds with any of my classmates because I was so different. You know, I didn't live near them. I didn't dress like them. And you know how it is in high school. It's just natural. It's what happens. So, but I had these new friends every year. And all I wanted to do was go to the countries that they came from. And it was just my passion to leave rural farmland, Indian reservation, Wisconsin, and see the world because I knew there was so much more out there.
Yeah, it would have had to have been interesting to experience so many different cultural differences in such a short period of time. And then your world being so small, being where you were located, and just knowing like, wow, all of this is out there just
yeah.
waiting.
Yeah.
Like it's so expansive.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's not like you had the internet then and you were just like, you know, you had your radio stations and that's how, and you had three TV channels and there was no cable out in the country where I grew up. So it was just very you know, it was boring, but I was never bored. But anyway, so I couldn't wait to leave because the expectation at that time was to you get married and you would, you know, have to have kids by 20 something. And that wasn't,
especially in the rural areas, you're like, yeah, you get married right out of high school.
They marry their high school sweethearts and there's nothing wrong with that.
You're a mom by 22.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I could not see myself doing that at all. So, and there wasn't, no one in my family went to college. So there was none of that push. Like you need to go to school. You need to start applying to schools. Actually, there was none of that was ever spoken. It was just a matter of you get a job and you just move on. Right. Yeah. And so.
I think that was also our generation.
I think
it was never,
you didn't,
it was never discussed going to college. We were just, nobody talked about it, especially if you were socioeconomically on the lower end, like we were. I just don't think it was expected. Nobody in my family went to college either. It was never like, okay, are you, you're pretty smart in school. You ever think about, you're going to go to college? Nobody ever had that conversation.
No,
you never got, it was never discussed in the house. You know, it was either something you decided yourself you were going to go to or not. That was it.
So I didn't want to go to school anyway. So that was fine with me. I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, you know, so I ended up just wanting to leave home for family reasons. And so I'm an only child, but I decided that I needed to get out of there. And so at 18, I left home. I worked as a waitress in a truck stop. When I graduated, I was 17 when I graduated high school and saved all my money so I could go visit the foreign exchange student friend I had in Sweden. And they said that they would take me in and I could live with their family. And my whole goal was I'm just going to work my butt off until I have enough for an airline ticket and a little bit of savings, which was $1,000. And for me, that was a lot of money.
Right.
So I left home at 18 and I moved to Sweden.
Wow. That's incredible.
So, and that was a wonderful experience. And I stayed with a fantastic family. And my ignorance, it was great in the sense that I didn't know that, and this is true to this day, if you go to Europe, you can only stay for 3 months.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that. So
I'm a Netherlands person now.
I'm staying here. And my Swedish mom, the one that I was living with, after like a year or so, she's like, I think you're here illegally now. And I said, really? What? And she's like, I don't think you're allowed to be here this long. Do you have a visa? And I'm like, what? And she's like, no, Janine, you're going to have to get this sorted out because my Swedish mom got me into some Swedish schools. So I was now living with this family, working on this big farm in Sweden. And that's a whole nother story of how they were already so advanced when it came to ecology and recycling and healthy lifestyle and all that. You know, the Scandinavians have it nailed. They're all calm and cool and all this. So I learned a lot from that experience. My Swedish mom got me into school because she was the one to tell me, you can't clean houses your whole life, because that's what I was doing. Yeah. I was cleaning their home, taking care of their kids. And then I started to try to get their neighbors or friends of theirs because my money was going to run out, you know. And she's like, you can't do this forever. You need an education. And I was like, she goes, well, I'm going to get you into school. And she signed me up. She did it. I'm like 19. And she's like, you're going to go to this school. And this is the day. And they'll teach you English and you'll learn Swedish there too and all these things. So
how did your parents feel about this?
I have very hands-off parents. I had a stepfather who didn't care at all. And my mom was more caring about my stepfather. So it was just like, I don't think they believed me when I was buying my luggage, asking where do I go to get my passport and these things, because I just didn't, it was just not in their, you know, radar that I would ever do that or that maybe I was even capable. But they didn't, I think they're in shock a little bit.
Yeah.
But they're like, okay, go.
See ya.
I read for book club my year of living Danishly. Have you heard of that?
No, book? That sounds cute.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. But it was about this woman who left the culture here in the United States and moved with her husband to work there, and just the difference of everything in their entire culture and the way they work and the time off that they have and how they prioritize family and learning. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit more about like the big, I know you mentioned some of those differences, but some big aha moments you had when you were there that was like, wow, this is how I want to live, you know?
Well, I don't know. It was lifestyle wise on how I wanted to live. They were eating such a completely different diet. I grew up with a mom who didn't cook. We probably are, most people are familiar with that, like canned chili, canned veggies, white bread, Velveeta cheese, you know, Pop-Tarts. Yeah. It's just what I grew up with. They were making food from scratch and they had to teach me to cook. And so I was like, and it, that was eye-opening. And so that was incredible that people, you cook your food. They didn't own a microwave. They could have, but they didn't. And you cook food and you heat things up on the stove, and microwaves were just getting started here. And so it was, that was kind of eye-opening, and they were already recycling, and they would say, crush that milk carton and do this and that. I was like, but why, you know? And they had to explain, because we making room and we're recycling and all these things. So that was pretty amazing. But I think what was most eye-opening was how we are the propaganda of our countries influencing how we think, and not knowing that we are being propagandized to. I don't know if that's a term. Sorry, people. strategery. No, just kidding. But anyway, so because in their community, they were like, oh, and that person there, they're in the Communist Party. And I freaked out. I was not freaking out, but I was like shocked. Like, there's
you're living amongst the communists?
Yes. I'm like, there's a neighbor that's a communist. I really couldn't get it through my thick skull. And she's like, well, yes. She goes, we're not, but they are, but it's not dangerous. Why are you so shocked over that? I'm like, well, they're bad. I mean, they, you know, I was kind of just reiterating things that were kind of told to me. I'm not going to say taught. I'm not going to say a teacher ever said communists are bad, evil people. But that was the idea, right? That communist Russia.
The Cold War was going on. Yes. Russia was a communist. And
that was
They were not our friends. They were evil. They were.
So I instantly.
It was sort of.
It was like that.
That's how it was delivered to us in that time. Yeah.
And then I had, you know, my eyes open. She's like, she goes, name one thing. They're very good at kind of calling you out. Name something that, you know, why that they're so bad. And I'm like, well, they teach their children early on about, you know, they do propaganda all the time and they don't teach them the truth. And she said, well, don't you stand in the front of the class with your heart and you say a pledge to your flag every morning? And I'm like, oh yeah, we do. Yes, you know. And it was those little things she pointed out, like they may have these Cold War posters, but we have Pledge of Allegiance, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. I'm just saying it's just that we were equally,
right,
you know, influenced, if you will.
Different but the same.
Yes, different but the same.
Yeah. It's a nice, loving way to show people by asking questions versus saying, no, this is why, or this is why you're wrong, or this is why your country, like, it's that loving, like, can you just think a little bit about this? Like, you don't have to say one way or another. Just think about that, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. So it was things like that. I guess I grew up a lot. They taught me a lot and just taught me that things were different and you could think about things differently and you should prioritize things differently. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
So when did they kick you out of the country?
Well, so yeah, you I thought that was going to happen. So I was, you know, I was there for about, I don't know, a year and a half before my Swedish mom thought this was probably not going to be a great idea. And
we should talk to someone.
Yeah. So she's like, let's get you a ticket. Because I think they realize we're not getting rid of her. let's get you a ticket to go back and get this sorted out. And I thought, I was resistant because I thought, no way, I'm going to go back. And like here, you can't be an illegal person. You're not allowed back in, right? And I thought, well, gosh, if I leave, I'm never going to get back into Sweden because they're going to say, no, you were illegal and you broke our laws. And sorry, you have to stay out, you know? And I thought, geez, I don't know if I want to risk it, but I didn't have a choice because
I couldn't go and do anything legally there. I couldn't work. I couldn't do it. Anyway, flew back to, instead of going to Wisconsin, flew to Chicago and had a meeting with the Swedish consulate. And I was perfectly fluent in Swedish at the time. I can read, I can write. And my accent at the time was very good. And so they are like kind of chuckling because I did my interview in Swedish. And they're like, we can't believe you stayed this long and that no one caught you. and you went to school. And, you know, so they were just sort of like amused. And I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I had no idea. And they're like, it's okay. You're going to have a work permit and residency in 5 weeks. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She's like, you're never going to be a burden on our system. You're employable. You speak the language. And so you're in a different category than those who come in with different statuses who can't speak or read, and they're more like a burden on the system, drawing from, you know, tax paying. And said, no, you, lucky you, you get to pay taxes in our country too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
So they were spot on. In 5 weeks, I had my residency and work permit for Sweden. I flew back and I lived in Sweden for 4 years.
Wow.
Nice.
That is awesome.
So call it Untamed Blossom, breaking the rules, staying illegally, worrying about it later. But it was really ignorance. It was just ignorance. I had no idea that you can't do that. So I know now. And
what did you do? Story. What did you do in those 4 years when you got back there? Did you just continue schooling?
School. And,
wow.
I studied economics there and I worked. I worked as a cashier in a grocery store. I drove a car. I mean, I had eventually an old Volvo, of course, and I rented a little house. So I was very fortunate. I was put with a family who would be kind of wealthy by even their standards or our standards, which is not the norm in Sweden because the social classes are, it's really a high level. Everyone is the same, but everyone has a lot of everything and they're all happy, right? And they have a lot of things to take care of their people.
Yeah.
But my Swedish family had 7 rental units and we lived out in the country and they rented to people like doctors who wanted that experience out in the country. And so I rented a small little home from them. So they were nearby. It's like I had family. I wasn't alone. I had a boyfriend. You know, I had a regular life, but everyone out in the country, you don't go out to eat in Sweden. Everyone cooks. You stay in and you go to each other's places and you cook. And going out to eat is really seldom and rare. So I lived a really normal kind of existence with work and school, and I loved it. And I had a really great time, but I realized I was growing out of that and that I had a Swedish friend and she was going to go to school in Switzerland. And she was like, hey, you should do this. And it was to study tourism and hotel management. And I looked at her, I'm like, I will never be able to afford going to that school. It was a Swiss school, you know, and it was a very special Swiss school. And I said, I'm not going to even get in because I think I know the kind of people they're looking for. I'm not that kind of person. And also, I just don't have that kind of money. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Just apply. And then we can worry about the money later, because she goes, now that you're paying taxes, you can get a Swedish school loan to go and study in other countries when Sweden doesn't have that educational program. So Swedish educational system didn't have a hotel tourism program at any of the universities because their school is free in Sweden. So if I wanted to study to be a doctor in Sweden, I could have. It would have been free. But no, I liked the idea of travel. And I thought, wow, if I could make a career of this, that would be pretty amazing. And so I thought, I want to go to Switzerland and I want to study
and tourism.
Yeah. And they just don't have a program for it. So you're allowed to get a school loan. So she's like, you'll probably get a school loan. Then why don't you just see if you got in to begin with? And I'm like, that's fair enough. So back in the day when we didn't have electronic anything, they made you write an essay to get into the school. Tell us about you, about your family, about these things. And I'm like, oh my God, like I can't tell them that I come from a highly dysfunctional home, growing up on an Indian reservation. We have no money, you know, and I'm
barely here in Sweden because I'm cleaning houses and working in a grocery store. And I'm like, they're not going to want them. So I had to lie. Of course, that was like the only answer. It was like, truth is not an option.
I have to make something up.
I got to make something up. So I wrote my essay that that I came from a very affluent family and that we had private jets and that I'm currently living in Sweden. And these things, I just, a lot of unnecessary fluff. They're probably just wondering, can she pay the bill? That's all I care. Clearly she can write. Okay. But I don't know that at the time. I'm probably 23 or something. And so it, they were like, yeah, just I sent that in and then I was accepted.
They're like, she has so much money. Yeah, they're like, she will fly here in her private.
For why? She's coming to school. Yeah, yeah, we'll take her.
Yeah, we'll take her. And, you know, maybe she has a lot of siblings.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, they accepted me and I ended up going to school in Switzerland. I got a school loan from Sweden.
That's awesome.
And so I went to a really good Swiss school.
So now you've gotten through college, in essence, and then now a secondary college tour, if you will, really without expending any of your income because it's free.
It's free. Yeah. And so, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was, you know, all this risk taking and just trying to do it and trying to figure it out. I realized there wasn't going to be any help back home.
Right.
And you've got to be creative, right? Yeah. And you got to figure it out. And I had nothing to lose. Like, right? We're saying there, I don't get where I think I'm supposed to be and I'll find something else. But I'm determined I'm not going back to the States at this time. That was my thought in my head. Yeah.
And well, so, two beautiful countries, by the way.
Like, they're really
by
amazing.
The way, I'm hanging out in these amazing spots on the world, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure you miss Wisconsin, but
Yeah.
So from there, when did you decide you were coming back? And then was it a career change that led you to that?
Not really. I actually worked in Switzerland after I graduated, which is another big hurdle if you know anything about trying to be employed in a country like Switzerland, because they can have anyone, everyone wants to move there and live there and get work. And so when I told my new classmates, my Swiss, I went to an international school in Switzerland. And so there, it was from people all over the country. I mean, all over the world, I should say. And so when I told my friends that I want to stay in Switzerland and get a job, because I had a boyfriend there, I don't want to leave, but you know how this goes, girls. And so, they're like, you're never going to get a job here. The competition is crazy. And you only speak two languages, you know, or I could speak a little French because I was in the French speaking part and my French was getting better, but my school's curriculum was based in English, believe it or not. So, you know, in other words, speaking almost three languages, it just wasn't good enough. Good enough. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to try. So I put some feelers out to the people. And one of my classmates also worked in a hotel. And so she's like, I asked her, I said, if you hear of any openings for someone like me, you know, we went to the same school, like, would you let me know? I think I want to stay and I want to work, of course. She's like, okay, I will. I'll let you know if I hear anything. Well, a week later, this company comes in and says, we're a tour operator based out of Zurich, and we want to have this hotel as one of our bases before our American tourists come through and do this tour of Europe. And this would be a holdover spot, and they would, you know, use it to jet off to different cities in Switzerland. And so they said, we're looking for someone who would speak English really well, who would, you know, relate to Americans, but who's also just here locally in this small Swiss village. And so she's like, she tells me that this, and they left a business card. And she's like, here, you should call them because I think you would be a good fit for what they're looking for. I called, I had a phone interview. They're like, you're basically hired. You just have to come to Zurich and pick up some paperwork for you to start. And I was in my finals and they're like, I said, well, I have this final and this final, but I could take the train there, which is like a 3-hour train ride to where I needed to be.
the next day or that afternoon. And they're like, yeah, that sounds good. I literally got a job like that in Switzerland when everyone is like, you won't work here. It's not going to work. Don't get your hopes up. I got it. So I was hired by this company. I was paid under the table. They didn't care. I wasn't legal for this either.
Right.
they don't care. And that's what I really learned about life so far. Yes, even currently. These rules, they're kind of, it's okay to kind of break some of them. I'm not saying we should go steal and do anything like that. I'm just saying, just venture out there and don't be afraid, because it's sometimes the only way we get a break or we get a chance, you know?
Yeah.
People like who grow up in those kind of situations, you know, don't have all the connections in the world or the money to get into that school or that. So yeah. And there people are willing to still work with you and take care of you and do things. So they put me up in the hotel. I lived in the hotel, paid me cash. I was a tour manager for this company during the stint that they had these American tourists coming in for a few months. And then I worked in a boutique part-time in this village, honing in my French. And so that I got to stay, and that's what I did. And then my, the guy I was dating, he was going to another school in this village. It was a village that had three international schools, and he was from Greece. And so he was graduating. So I just needed to bide my time until we could be together. Yes. And, when he was going to graduate, we were moving to Greece. And so I did that. And then he wanted to come to the States and get his master's. And that's how I ended up back here 6 years later.
Wow.
In Europe, and now back in the States with him. And he was, getting his master's. And I did it.
Where did you land when he came back to get his master's? Where was that at?
Exotic Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh.
But I thought it would be because I was from Wisconsin.
Right.
I had been to Florida on a vacation.
Yeah.
But to live
tropical.
There.
Tropical.
Yes. I'm like, to live there sounds really awesome. But I thought, well, that's where he wants to be. I don't really have a say, and I'm not bothered by this. I'm like, this is going to be good. So that's where I landed for 10 years.
Wow. What'd you do while you were there?
I was a travel agent.
Travel agent.
Yes. Yeah. And I was in, my expertise was in international travel.
Yeah.
Because I traveled
a lot.
That's
a perfect fit for what you'd done up to that point. That was beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you learn about the kind of person you kind of morphed into over this time? Like, what did you learn about where you were and like how you were able to make connections? And, you know, it seems like you just had a slow burn and build of becoming this person who was so naive and didn't know much to this like international woman.
Batty.
Yeah. I was just out here doing all these things.
Speaking like, three languages, being like, what?
it's weird because it happened so slowly.
Yeah.
That you don't realize until you make your calls back home. And I didn't have friends that I knew. I didn't have any contact. I didn't have close friends at all from high school. But it was weird to have conversations with my mom and realize she doesn't really know what I'm talking about or feeling or like what I've seen. And I come from such a humble background that I'm shocked. I'm rubbing shoulders with princesses from Saudi Arabia in school in Switzerland. You know, I am just like shocked myself. So I don't even know how to answer that. It's such a slow thing. And yet I realize I am not those people and I'm very different. And I have it. What do they call it? That imposter syndrome?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I still have that because my later careers, I've been in with all these people of status, extreme wealth. And I'm shocked that I am like near them in the same room where, you know, like they're talking to me and they actually listen. And so it's just sort of been a weird thing. And yet I'm, you know, the same me. And yet I've grown and matured so much. It's kind of strange, but I stay humble because I always remember where I came from. I'm really grateful for what I have.
Yeah. I really want to hear some Jeffrey stories.
Okay.
I mean, mostly because for those of you who don't know, we live in the neighborhood where we are right next to where all of this supposedly went down. Right.
Right. Right.
We are in Wexner's backyard, in essence. Like I live in that town. So this was all very close to us.
Right. It is. Yeah. So I'll just explain that I started working with Michael Jeffries directly. They discovered me through NetChat. They gave us, and this kind of sets the stage for what might not be happening, but their mindset. So worked for NetJets for 7 years and eventually became the director of in-flight training, which meant I was responsible for training flight attendants. And so I get this little project on my lap from my boss, and they said, hey, the Abercrombie and Fitch account they're not unhappy with our flight attendants, but we kind of don't fit the bill, if you know what I mean, because NetJets is great. They hire all ages, sizes, colors, everything, right? And so Abercrombie and Fitch is all about hotness in sexiness, mm-hmm. especially male sexiness. And in my head, I didn't even understand the brand that much because I'm older than that brand, right? It was like I thought their clothes were cool, but I wasn't a teenager. So it didn't sit in that it was mostly like a lot of male stuff. And so I think I'm going to be getting these. They say they want to hire, they want to have models be trained as their flight attendants. And if they were trained to our standards on NetJets, would we let them operate the flight as far as service goes and be in the kind of cool jeans and outfits that we had uniforms clearly that were not hot and sexy apparently. So, and I'm like, I can't believe this is a thing. And I'm like, here's another amazing, strange opportunity. So I said, yeah, I'll write up. They're like, can you write up a little, you know, syllabus or like how many weeks you think this would do to get them through? It doesn't have to be a lot of the NetJets company indoctrination because they weren't going to be employees of NetJets. They needed to be certified as flight attendants to save lives and do the things that you have to do when you're in the air. And so, and also know how to work the Gulfstream 5 aircraft, you know, systems in the back from galley and cleaning and what you can heat and how you do that and service and clean up that stuff. So I wrote it out and they presented it to them and they said, yeah, let's do it. And I said, okay, great. This is going to be so much fun. So I was the director, but I had trainers under me. And so it was going to be a 3 or 4 week program and they were up for it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, there's probably going to be these snotty models. I'm sorry. You know, that's just that perception. I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going to be airheads. You know, what you think you're going to get when you say the word model, you don't know that that's a human being. And they can be just as intelligent as anything. Cause you know, they're just,
you're thinking Derek Zoolander though. You know what I mean? Right. You know,
Blue steel. Right.
Right.
So I was like, oh, this I'm mentally preparing for. It'll be
this
fun.
This might be tough. This could be a tough gig.
It might be tough. I don't know how interested they're in it. Like, are they really in it? Or are they just going through the motions so they can be in front of Michael and get up on the ladder of you know, noticed? And so I greet these guys. And there were, 4 really cute guys. And of course, I'm getting giddy. And I had, because one was like Mr. Idaho or something. It was like ridiculous. But anyway, and I had all my trainers who are mostly female volunteer, you know, like, hey, if you need any help on this project.
Happy to help out.
Yes. But anyway, these guys were fantastic. And I put them through the program. They were legal. They were good. And they were serious. And it isn't what I thought I was going to get. It was such a beautiful surprise. So they were awesome. But anyway, that's how Abercrombie's, you know, company was operating under Michael's jurisdiction because he wanted from start to finish, these guys would represent the brand and not the regular NetJets flight attendants because Abercrombie was about to get their own jet. And this was a transitional piece. So when they were going to buy their plane, get it decked out the way they like, they would have these already cultivated flight attendants ready to go.
Smoking hot young dudes.
Yes. And they were excellent, by the way. And they were always polite and super nice and best group I ever had, really. And so after working with them for a couple months, I had one of my last conversations with them was, I really enjoyed working with your team. This was just, you know, via phone.
and with my kind of like my counterpart who was here in Ohio. I'm in Hilton Head, South Carolina. That's where my Gulfstream base was for training. So that's where we were. We weren't here. And so here, meaning Columbus. So I said, look, I really was burnt out with NetJets. And after 7 years, this was so fun. These guys were lighthearted and was great. And I'm like, so I said, hey, you know, I really enjoyed working with your guys. And if there is ever an opportunity that you think you might need someone like me, I hope you would consider, because I just found it just a great joy. They're like, well, since you've opened that door, they're like, we thought it bad form to approach you, but, you know, we have been talking about you. And so they were looking for a house director, a house manager. Michael has three properties, or had three properties. And so, and then the jet was coming and all that stuff. So they a week later, I'm flying to Columbus just to meet them in person for the first time, and got an offer and gave my notice with NetJets, and then was moved to Columbus to work with Michael directly, not at Abercrombie and Fitch's campus. I was not an employee of the company, a personal employee of Michael and his partner and the staff that I was about to take care of.
Wow.
Yeah. So, because you take in NetJets, you're caring for meeting and exceeding the needs you hope of people who can have it all, do it all. And I was in that mindset of how you think that way when it comes to meals, home, the cleaning, the detailing of the cars, the yard, you know, how we're going to react, our manners, what we're going to do, and how we host parties. So worked with them, essentially guiding people. That's what I ended up doing. And Michael, although I didn't interact with him that much because he was always in the office, he was a very hardworking guy. Yeah. I always worked with his partner. And that man. And so we were always putting together their trips and things like that. But everyone I hired, because I got to hire people, I was in that position. Everyone was attractive, you know? And so there was this unspoken rule that we all have to fit in the jeans and you have to look really cute. And, so those things are true.
You know? Did you get to a point where you were like, this is starting to feel icky? Like, did you start to see some of those patterns?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I would need to hire, let's say, a housekeeper. The housekeeper actually had to look good too.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, you're thinking, well, you know, this person was more than qualified and it was lovely and great personality.
They're mopping the floors.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet,
scrubbing the toilets.
They
don't, but they had to look a certain way.
I had to look a certain way. And I had to change people's appearances.
Wow.
To make them fit. Because sometimes when, let's say you're hiring a person that's going to work in the internal accounting of the house, billionaires have their own accountants. You know, they're not going to use the companies. We had a lot of in-house people. I had a staff of 40 that ranged from accounting to a lot of administrative to purchasing for the homes. We had a purchaser for the homes. We had a system of ordering and shipping as if we were our own little company.
Wow.
And things like that. So every one of those had to be, and they preferred youthful, of course, you know, and yeah. So one time I was asked to, this really great, talented accounting lady, she was older. And so Matthew asked if I could talk to her about her hair color. Like, this is so illegal right now, you know? Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah. So I was like, I will do it. That's my job, right? I will do it. Yeah. And her teeth were very yellow from just stains. Like,
yeah.
Well, she had fine teeth there. Mm-hmm. He's like, and if you can talk to her about her teeth, I'm like, okay, I'm going to, this is so illegal. So I will find a way to do all these things and be this hero. And yeah, I got her, it was true. She had beautiful skin. And I said, oh, your skin is so gorgeous. I'm like, I bet you would look like 20 years younger if you actually had darker hair. And she's like, do you think so? And I said, I do. I said, I think you would look amazing. Amazing. And she's like, well, it's just a lot of money to keep up, you know, that kind of color. And I color my hair. And I said, totally. And no, I know. I agree. I go, well, I mean, yeah, just if you want, I said, are you interested in like trying? Cause I know Michael and Matthew are pretty, you know, they're pretty generous when it comes to aesthetics and things. I could see if they would cover the cost of your hair color if you want. And she's like, would they? I'm like, no, maybe. And so she did it. And I said, well, I talked to them, and if you want to color your hair, we can pay for it.
Wow.
And so she did it, and we colored her hair. And so
this doesn't sound like to me, like at first when you started down this road, I was like, she's going to be talking about grooming, like creating a situation where young women want to hang out with all these young studly men. And really, it just sounds like,
well, he wasn't really interested in the women, really.
No.
So,
no. Well, no, but they were trafficking women. So you would being attracting young women, and you put them on a private jet with a whole bunch of hot dudes, right? Like, that's what I was thinking when we first started down this road. And now it sort of sounds more like a mental illness. Like, there needed to be this aesthetic for everyone in order for them to feel comfortable, which is strange.
Right. And I think that's where they get in trouble. These were all adult men that were invited to parties in hopes of being, you know, advancing their modeling career to get in front of Michael and his partner and his wealthy friends.
Yeah, right? Totally.
And that's where he got into troubles, because he was, you know, trying to have a lot of attractive men in a room. And I think maybe drugs were used and things like that. But see, I didn't see that stuff. I was not allowed to. They did shelter me from it, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
But
you just saw like the residual of some of those decisions, right? Because through watching that documentary, it was definitely, they wanted the aesthetic to reach every, like you said, every corner of the company. Yeah. They wanted to have a very clear perception of what they were about. Mm-hmm. But the really gruesome things that were happening with the male models were crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. And not that this wasn't horrible, that this woman, you know, this poor woman's like excellent at her job. And they're like, well, she could have better hair and teeth, you know? Like, it's just, wow, that's.
Yeah. And that speaks to their mental state of mind, in my opinion, right? Like, you're not judging them based on, obviously, their talent, but.
It was
solely based on what they look like.
They had this notion that they could train a person to do anything. So they just needed the right person. But that person had to be youthful and attractive enough. You know, no one had to all be supermodels. If you guys are looking at me, I'm not a supermodel.
It's just anyway. Because you're short. Other than that, yes, you fit the bill. Sure.
I'm I totally would consider you a hottie. So that's not true.
Thank you. Well, but. So anyway, they just were all about looks from inside, outside, appearances, the cars, themselves, their employees and their people at the parties. When I had to go, I used to have to fly to New York, and I was interviewing models for events to serve food. And they were all hot.
Yeah.
And that's where we had mixed. We had men and women serving. And so, it was quite a unique environment. It had a lot of rules. There is a lot of strictness, and it's just kind of crazy, not just about the aesthetics, not how people should look, but just a lot of control. Yeah. It was I would call it a sick environment. Yeah. I was in it for 7 years. It felt like a cult in a way. I had to wear a uniform every day, which was Abercrombie jeans and then a navy blue polo and flip-flops year round. And we all had the flip-flops year round. You would come in your street clothes. We had a locker room. You would change into your uniform. And at the end of the day, you would change back out. And we had our, the housekeeper, the one assigned to the office anyway, she did our laundry. And then just would stack our locker back with our clothes were labeled, just like in camp.
Yeah.
But you had to wear this all of the time. So I was so sick of wearing navy blue jeans and polo everywhere I went with the jacket of the season and flip-flops in the winter. And I know I got a lot of weird looks. It was so sick. There weren't. Yeah. Anyway, so we convinced them eventually that we would need some boots. And then we had figured out that they wanted to go with wellies, which are just cold rubber boots.
Right. Yeah.
But that was the only hip, cool boot that they were open to.
Wow.
Yeah.
When did you decide, all right, enough is enough, and that leaves you wanting to work for yourself?
Actually, Michael was asked to leave by the board of directors, eventually to retire. He wasn't asked to leave. He was asked to retire, and he was no longer going to need his residence here in Columbus, because the only reason why he had it was because he was working there. And and he, you know, would go to New York every weekend or internationally go somewhere. So he laid a bunch of people off, and I could see the writing on the wall, and they couldn't tell me in advance that I was laid off with a generous severance. They were very generous with me. They were very good to me. So it's hard to speak of them because I saw good sides and I saw all the positive things. Mm-hmm. Although it was a weird environment, I'm not going to lie, and I have a ton of stories, but I'm under an NDA.
Right.
And there's a lot I cannot share. I was interviewed by the FBI in regards to the sex trafficking. And that was that's a story in itself. But anyway, they deemed me like I provided everything I could to them. And I don't think they're coming back. I don't.
Yeah.
They told me they
might. NDA doesn't apply to the FBI, right?
It does not. It does not. You tell them everything.
You tell them everything. You
know, cooperate, whatever you need. Yes. So, you know, that's been
clear. I appreciate that you have the very positive still spin on that, right? Like, I think a lot of us find ourselves, and I could say that this is a much lesser scale, but in medicine, right? Like, I don't really align with Western medicine right now, but I spent 27 years doing
it. Yeah.
You know? And so sometimes you're just in something that you're not really, you have certain intentions around and you don't really understand the rest of it in the moment.
But right.
Just later you're like, wow, that was really probably kind of crazy that I was doing that and involved in that. That's their burden to bear, not mine. And they will answer to their actions in and of themselves.
I know that a lot of stories are accurate. I was just very fortunate. Treated really kindly. And So I got laid off, and I had to regroup. And I thought, like, okay, my career since then had been revolving around a lot of wealth. Like, do I go back into private aviation? Do I go look for working with another individual in, let's say, LA, New York, where, you know, you work with people like Kardashians or you work with NBA stars or something, you know? But I'm like, oh my God, it's so soul sucking because all you do is spend a ton of money, and they can be super nice people, but it's soulless work. You're just making extravagant things happen. And I was like, to start over.
Missing something.
Yeah. So I never forgot. I had the biofeedback session. And then I'm like, I sat in the chair while I had it. And I told the practitioner, I want to do what you do. And she's like, you could do it. I'm like, no way. Because you're my past. I think there is no way I could learn this amazing system. And I'd have to learn all about the body and anatomy and neuroscience and micro and biochemistry and all these things.
And you're like, and I've been the furthest from that. I've been studying economics and then tourism and then jet setting around the world.
Yes, exactly. And I didn't tell her this, but she's like, yes, you could do it. But anyway, that popped into my head because I never forgot about that session. It was incredible. It was life-changing. And I contacted her and I said, how much does this equipment cost and how do I get my education and all those basic questions. And because my severance was really nice, I was able to go back to school, buy my equipment, go study, and kind of just become the person I really was meant to be, I feel. So
how long was that schooling that you had to go through?
Well, it's online.
Okay.
So it's a go at your pace kind of thing.
Okay.
It took me probably about a year and a half.
Okay. I just think it's interesting because this is one of the things that we hear all the time in these stories when we interview people. people have a perception of a big change or a career change or something like this being such a hard and long road that they shy away from making a choice to change. So can you just share maybe some words of advice for someone that's thinking, man, my career is not in alignment with who I am and I want to get out of this. How do they start?
Right. Well, be bold like me. Lie, cheat, steal, whatever you have to do. Don't kill anyone. Do not kill anyone. No, I'm just kidding.
We should draw some lines.
Tell anyone. So when I got into biofeedback, I was 45.
Yeah.
Not really what anyone advises you to do, a whole career change, not even just a job switch.
Yeah.
So go with it with your heart. Just if it feels right, it's going to work out. You have to work hard, though. You have to be disciplined. I mean, there's no super magic words other than if you feel this passionately and you can't stop thinking about it and you're not just in it because, ooh, that would be good hours and that would be good money. And I wouldn't have to deal with that person in my office anymore. Those are all the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. But if it's something I can't stop thinking about and you'd go through the risks of like, if I lose everything in this, can I be pretty okay still? Yeah. And the answer is yes, then go with it. But you just don't give up. Just keep going. Because at 45, I changed careers. I'm 58 now. I'm glad I did. And it wasn't exactly easy, but it wasn't exactly difficult. I'll tell you that. It shocked me. When you're in alignment with what you really want to do, it doors open, things become easy because the universe is finally letting you do what your heart desires and you're listening finally.
Yeah.
It's always you doubled down, right? Like you've gotten into the whole really biohacking and in a huge way. And I use that word lightly, but Janine likes these crazy new, she's always looking for the new technology that's out there, not woo woo stuff, but like real technology that's helping people.
Yeah.
The quantum bed, you should tell them about that. That's the newest.
Well, I have the quantum bed. I've had the quantum bed since 21.
Yeah.
It is a heated platform. People call it a med bed. It is not. So I want to clear anything like that up. But it uses infrared lighting and heating along with audible frequencies to help align the body with its, you know, it's called ATP production, which is adenosine triphosphate, which helps reduce inflammation in the body in a nutshell. Reducing inflammation in the body helps the body overcome a lot of situations from arthritis, my people with Lyme disease who have neuropathy, people who just have aches and pains, people who have long COVID, things like that. It's really good at helping them through that. But I have other amazing technologies that I use for whatever, if they have something more specific going on and they don't need truly a biofeedback session because they're not trying to find a lot of answers. If they just, I prefer a person just get that part fixed and not and save time and save money.
Yeah.
But so some of these tools I have are just for that alone, like to fix a knee or help a shoulder or something. But this quantum bed is good for many, many, anything that ails you. Sounds like snake oil, but it is really amazing. So I have a little practice that has three rooms and I do different modalities in these rooms, but my goal is to have the best technology a person can have to help people. And I'm just a technology person now. I didn't realize that, but I am it. And I'm,
you know. I walked into her office and she's got a Tesla coil sitting in the middle of her room. I do. I was like, I love this. We are in alignment. Yes, I love this. This is fantastic. So
where can people find you physically and on the internet? Where can they look up your services and all of that and book an appointment with you?
Yes. Thank you. It's energeticbiohealth.com, all strung together, energeticbiohealth.com. And so I have my practice off of Cleveland Avenue, and it's in a quiet little setting and pretty easy to find. It's at 2531 Oakstone Drive, but it's on my website. And, you know, I don't take walk-ins, so they would always have to make an appointment, which there is a contact form on my website. And they can always text me at 614-429-7354 if they want to have any questions or just text for an appointment or more information, that's great too.
So, we will make sure we link all of those in the show notes so people can easily find those.
I wasn't expecting
that. Janine was on a podcast, was it last year, that talked about the quantum bed and not very many people had them. And so she was like, I wasn't expecting it, but I suddenly blew up. I was like,
yes,
she went viral and everybody was calling her and traveling from crazy distances to come and be on the bed. And
I had people flying from all over the US to do the bed. It was a thing. And this was a few years ago. Yeah. I was on a podcast for that. And it's because people misinterpreted as a med bed. And that is, in a lot of conspiracy terms, this bed that heals everything from cancer to whatever, grows limbs back. It's something that may or may not exist. I don't have that. If I had that, I would be a millionaire. I would be healing everybody.
Right.
But no, I don't have that. But yeah, it was crazy. It was my phone blew up and it was awesome. But
we always like to also ask if you wouldn't mind sharing maybe a few women in your life that have really inspired you or like changed paths that you've been on, or either person you know in real life or maybe just someone you aspire.
I think my teacher, Mrs. Lucas, in third grade. And not for anything other than she gave me kindness and love when my mom was ignoring me. And I went to the mother-daughter evening with her, which I'm sure broke my mom's heart. But my mom didn't show an interest in going. But when my teacher came to pick me up, I think my mom was like, caught on. Yeah. Like, oh my God, okay. So Mrs. Lucas, she was already old then, I'm sure she's passed, but she was my third grade teacher. And she was just said someone would listen to me. And I was this awkward girl. And, you know, it was just nice to have her like be not even a mom. I didn't share anything with her, but I'm sure, you know, people who work with kids could detect like something's up. Yeah. So she just gave me extra attention. Looks like
it's awesome.
You know, there is one person who no one is going to know who really inspires me is a woman from the 1930s, and her name is Ruth Drone. And Drone is spelled like drown, D-R-O-W-N. And she is one of those hidden figures in our history of technology and science advancements. And she has amazing books, and she developed one of the first technologies that could sense things that are wrong in the body and pathology behind it, like a parasite or mold. And from her work, other men built upon their machines. But Ruth Drone is fantastic because she had a brilliant mind for science, but she could also channel messages from Atlanteans.
Atlanteans. Hell yeah.
Yeah. She wrote a book about her, it's called Messages from Atlantis or something, which is like prose about all like how a human should be and da da da. And then she writes these technical manuals on all this stuff and is like healing people and detecting cancer through her early devices in the 1930s.
Wow.
She's fantastic.
We will definitely link her information. Link her
stuff for sure. Well, Ruth Drone is probably long past, but such a fascinating female figure that predates Tesla. And I loved Nikola Tesla. I mean, he's a hero in my world. But she, when I learned about her, I was just amazed. So yeah,
that's awesome. Well, I think that's the whole point of Untamed Blossoms, right?
Is yeah.
Showcase and highlight even those women who didn't get to have their voice and to have the spotlight even then, to shine light on them now. Pay homage to her and make sure that people can look her up and read about her and celebrate all the things that she was a precursor to.
We start everything.
Yeah, we do.
It's always us. It's always the men who take it. Well, thank you so much. This is unbelievable.
This is amazing. I've
been on this journey with you guys. Thank you for listening.
Oh my gosh, it was great. Wonderful. And I know that people are going to resonate with your story. And I think that there's lots of women out there that find themselves in similar, you know, that was the whole conversation we had just earlier. We got here about
how different women hear about themselves through storytelling. And so you told a beautiful story about, you know, all of your adventures, the adventures of Janine, and some life lessons that you learned.
Just don't give up. Break the rules when it seems okay, and be bold. Just be bold. Don't be afraid. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Be totally. Brave, and you can do it. Your heart calls you to do it. You'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, like we mentioned, we want to make sure that Janine's information is easily accessible. So we'll link all of that to the show notes. Please make sure you're following us on Instagram and Facebook. We'll also link Janine's information in there as well. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because we want to do a lot of incredible things this year, and we can only do so if our follower count allows
us. Also rate and review us. Send us to people that you think would love to hear Janine's story.
Until next time.
We love you.
Love you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Love you guys.